make you like host or like
Yeah.
make a backup recording.
Yeah, of course.
Where do I do that? Host, make co-host. How to record local file. Let's try that.
So I should now be able to go. Yeah, I can record. Yeah, so I'm recording too.
Okay,
So we have a backup.
recording here. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the audio. I'll just with the video. I'll just leave it. Oops. That was great. It's like I just spilled some tea. Okay, are we all ready?
Yeah.
Thing for the stream.
Have you guys already had a conversation about Windows 11?
No, not yet.
No.
Okay, good.
Let's have a look. I missed that one.
I was going to check someone was going to do that one because that's a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a big thing.
It's following the new brand. Don't stick by anything you said before.
Must even find a story that's not the daily file. PC Mag, that'll do.
Was that?
I said, I'm trying to find an article that wasn't the Daily Mail, which is like a really poor quality newspaper in the UK.
Okay, let's get started. Hope the stream is a little bit better.
What to do.
Hello and welcome to the big show where we talk about all the big stories in tech, everything that is not Apple. As kind of happens, Ewan is not here today. He's out on site working again. It's like busy, busy, busy. How it should be. He's not on his yacht. I think his yacht is, I don't know. It's in the shop or something. Not sure. But and Jeff is not here either, so I'm the one hosting. But I have a really cool panel today, and we have a surprise guest. But not gonna give away who it is. Well, you've already seen him. Atlee, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? I haven't been
I'm
here in a
doing
while.
well. You have
Nice to see you
been
guys.
busy too, right?
Yeah, I've been pretty busy.
Yeah, we've heard. Like, how's the construction going? Like, any progress or is it
Actually,
slow?
no, it kind of got stopped because a lumber has gone through the roof out here. I've got about 12 feet of my floor to do, and the 12 feet of the floor is going to cost me almost as much as the previous 38 feet cost.
Whoa.
Wow.
The
Okay.
We had a deck that we're going to build this summer that was supposed to be about $2,500 that we're now quoted close to $8,000 to do the exact same thing.
You're in the land of trees and things. How's that work?
Didn't you just sell trees?
Infinite knowledge. They're shipping all our trees to the lumber, to the construction processes in the U.S. So course, we have very, very little actual lumber here. So lots of fun.
Of course they are. Yeah. Didn't you just sell like a bunch of wood like last year at some point?
We did. We actually shipped out 139 tons of wood off of our property.
Now you're wishing you'd waited, right?
Like, absolutely. Well, so the funny thing is we actually had some custom milled for us, and we're building all our deck furniture out of it. Mm-hmm. So we're building like lounge chairs and tables and all sorts of things out of wood that was originally part of our property. So we took trees that were actually here, cut them down. And we're also, we have a big tree that's, we got about a piece of it that's about, and about 12 feet long by 3.5 feet around. And we're turning it into a big custom bench. Like, so we're going to build a big couch, and then we're putting in a stone fireplace outside. And then attaching a like a stone barbecue to that fireplace area. So we're going to have a big wooden couch outside.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. We really need, when we finally get it done, we're still trying to get the land leveled, but everything has just been so slowed down out here. And then everybody's trying, all the companies are trying to catch up with all the work that they had scheduled for last year. So now anything that's being booked is being booked for the end of this year or next year. So we're having to wait until middle, end of July before we'll be able to continue what we were doing last spring.
Wow.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That is crazy. Next to him, it's Rich. Rich, how are you doing?
Hello, everybody. I'm good, thank you. I hope you're all well as well. It's hot here. I'm just coping with that.
Same here. And you have a really cool shirt today. I already
talked. Thank you. Always wear proper lab attire. It's important, everybody.
It definitely is. And next to him, the man with the other really awesome shirt.
Thank you.
I don't know. I haven't asked Atlee what he's wearing. So maybe he has a cool shirt too.
Good.
No, today, not a cool shirt. Just a dev shirt about DevOps and making sure that you properly build a CDI for your software development.
Mm. That's very cool. I've got the Italian job instead. Hello, everybody. How are we all? I'm good. Easier week this week. Last week, I was cream crackered, as we say. So I didn't join in last week. I was absolutely cream crackered. This week, I hopefully a bit better.
Cream cracker. That's funny.
Knackered. Rhyming slang.
Nice. So, the week in tech, what's been happening? Who has the first story today? Let's see. Who has the fastest fingers? And it's Ian.
Yeah, I got lucky. I'll go with this one. I won't steal the Windows 11 story. I'll let someone else come with that one. But The other sort of big story today is there's been another big data breach. CVS, the large pharmaceutical giant in the US, one of their databases has been found accessible online. It's been downloaded, and it's a billion records of patient data, visitor ID, session IDs, device information, all that kind of thing, all the login details for the back end, basically, are one of their... Also, search records, exposures, and queries for medications, COVID-19 vaccines, and what CVS products they bought.
Wow!
So that's kind of bad. That's kind of bad in all kinds of ways for CVS, which is kind of like for the Brits equivalent of Boots.
That is.
I'm starting to worry that I have one shops there. Like,
I've been in the States. I've bought things in CVS when I've been in the States. It's like it's on every street corner near enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, so that's massive because they are. I mean, but CVS, I think CVS Health is an offshoot of CVS. It's not actually it's still the same company, but it's not the same as the pharmaceutical, as the kind of like the pharmacy brand, if you like.
Yeah.
But no, that's massive.
I mean, the fact that I don't know how many million people probably got their vaccine, like their COVID vaccine at CVS.
Oh, do they do it like that in the US?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like CVS, Walgreens, like they're all doing.
Oh, okay.
I mean, not just for COVID, like in general. You can walk in, like if you need your flu shot, you can walk into a CVS and get it.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it was actually a data breach or someone just walked into a CVS. There was nobody around. They walked into the manager's office and just took the computer.
That's as likely as anything. Isn't it?
Yeah.
The hardest thing about a CVS is trying to get any help.
Yeah. Well,
looking at the if you look at the second link I've whacked in the website Planet Link, which is the one for the actual data breach and what the guy found, I think it's basically the back end for their app, their mobile app.
204 gigabytes of data.
Yeah.
Dear God.
1.1483729 records. That's a billion records.
Pretty nice.
That's poor. That's nice poor work. Haul. That's poor. That's poor work.
That's a nice haul.
What I'm wondering though is. There's no way there's been a billion. It's not a billion different users. There's no way because.
Oh, CVS. No, it's not a billion users. It's a billion unique records, isn't it?
Yeah. But I would imagine a good percentage of that is absolutely generic, does not have any personal information because it would have an ID number associated with a particular purchase and then the amount of the purchase and what was bought and whether they paid with what kind of card. Like, I'm sure that a lot of that information would be generally innocuous information.
On the health side, I'm not so sure about that.
No, that's the thing. It's
not the shop. Like, it's the health side. So,
there's phone numbers. There's email addresses and phone numbers there. There's all and Gmail and email addresses. There's all these kind of good things that people want.
There's no way there'd be a billion of them unless every person...
A billion, I mean...
As we said, it's a billion unique records of some description or another, whether that's just a one or a zero in a field that says, did they have a vaccine with us tick?
Yeah.
That would count as a record, wouldn't it?
It's like, I mean, it's vaccines. It's probably like the pharmacies, like any medication you got. Like, I mean, for one person, there could be a lot of records.
I mean, like repeat prescriptions, I suppose, things like that, where you've got regular meds you collect.
I think though that when we look at that number of a billion records, billions of records belonging to CVS Health Exposed, billions of records makes it sound much more sensationalized than it is.
Oh.
Because if they said 1.2 million people's health information leaked, that doesn't sound nearly as spectacular as billions of records, which could end up leading to about 1 or 2 million people's worth of health records being leaked. Not that that's any better. I'm just saying. I think the billions is a little misleading.
Yeah. I mean, it's been enough though for it to ABC and a few and the other sort of national news outlets have all grabbed it across the states by the looks of things. ABC, Chicago, it's when you do a search, it's a nice bit of
CVS's user base maximum would be 100 million people maximum. They were trying to make it sound like it would be the equivalent of Facebook losing all its user data. And it's not. There's no way it is.
No, right? it definitely isn't.
I think the news companies, I think the news corporations are grabbing for a more spectacular headline by saying billions. Mm. I think that's part of selling clicks.
Yeah.
I mean, again,
I was just thinking about like the customers we had and when we migrated their data over to a new system. And they had like, I mean, over like 10 years, what they usually migrated, they had about 100,000-150,000 patients. Mm-hmm. And that was like a small to mid-sized office. Mm-hmm. So that would be like 10 records. Oh, no, a billion. Sorry. That would be about, what is that, 10,000 records per patient? Like if it was that size, which it isn't because CVS is definitely bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not that much.
If you're thinking about a person's health record, every single time they filled a prescription would be a record.
Yeah. Over years and years and years.
Over years and years and years. years. I can just say that from my dog's medication at the, because I buy my dog's medication at a local pharmacy because my dogs are big enough that they don't sell at the vet. They don't sell pills large enough.
Mm-hmm.
I have to buy them people's medication. But the thing is, just for, I would guarantee you that my dog's record is probably 300 records already.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the years that I've been here. So like I said, I think the number of, I have a problem with news agencies that hunt for the clicks by saying billions to try and make a story sound much bigger. It's bad enough that, you know, let's say 10 million people health records got out. Yeah. But don't try and make it sound like, you know, everybody in the entire world have lost all their health records, because that's what it sounds like. That's what they're trying to make it.
Yeah, I mean, any health data is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Like 10 records could be bad. So
I completely agree. Yeah. And for the right thing, the right information, it can have drastic consequences for mm-hmm. sure. Health information is very, very private. It's probably some of the most private information you'll have.
Yeah,
exactly.
Completely.
So yeah, I mean, especially if someone with mental illness like takes medication.
No, absolutely.
That could have been exposed.
Yeah, well, definitely. Yeah. And I hope that, I mean, that's the thing, is that the information is now out there. I'm hoping that it doesn't end up harming people, because you're not wrong. Someone with mental illness or some other thing, that if the information got out, it could affect their livelihood. It could affect their, you know, their personal life, because it might be information they don't want to share. They don't share, particularly with an employer or with, you know,
mm-hmm.
other people. So,
yeah, exactly.
I think this actually leads to the fact that we need, as society, we need to have rules in place that restrict corporations and companies from using information that's been picked up because it was leaked out against people.
Mm.
Right. And again, it's part of that. It goes to part of that ongoing problem that I have with the fact that we are doing things well in advance of our ability to control them or properly legislate them or mm-hmm. protect people from the outcomes of it.
Am I right in thinking that our government is currently itching to sell all NHS data to anyone who's got enough money?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
There's been a couple of fairly public sort of sales things where they've been buying up GPs,
right?
Or, you know, yeah, the surgeries or whatever else. And although still NHS, it gives them a finger in the pie to get into the data.
Yeah.
And there's been concern about whether that data will be allowed to pass into this large American healthcare giant's databases, or whether mm-hmm. it would stay private to the outside of them.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that was it.
I think the bigger problem is companies. I think the companies that you would see that would want this data more than anybody else would be insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. And that's what that particular company is, the one that's been buying the doctor surgeries here in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's they're privately run contracted to the NHS, so they own the business side of things.
See, when that comes up, it makes me wonder about what rules or what protections are put in place for people, for insurance companies to say, yeah, we're going to buy all this information up, and we're going to just keep taking the premiums from you, and let you think that you're protected, and then as soon as you make a claim, we're going to go back through this data and go, oh no, this is why we're not going to cover you.
Wasn't there a 60 minute segment recently in the US where that exactly is happening?
Yeah.
Companies, like people are paid to basically find a reason to reject a claim.
Oh, well, that's basically half of insurance companies' employees are exactly that. Mm-hmm. They have two sides to insurance companies. They have three sides. They have the people that sell insurance, the people that stop insurance from having to pay out, and then the lawyers that enforce the rules
mm-hmm.
when they have to. I mean, that's a business model for insurance companies.
Yeah, especially in the US.
Yeah. And this is when Rich and I are both glad we live in the UK and have the benefits of the wonderful NHS. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very
much wonderful so. NHS with the 7-year waiting list.
It's incredibly, but I mean, I'm pre-COVID now, post-COVID, things have improved in some way for some things. Mm. Definitely. I mean, I filled an online form in to get a doctor's appointment. I got called the same day. Now, that would have been a 3-week wait, but because the call's a 5-minute thing, and because the call's now triaged, because mm-hmm. you've typed in a form and explained what the symptoms are, you've got a much shorter call. You've got a much shorter wait for, we need to talk to that person now. So they bring him up and go, yeah, yeah. And I'm going in for endoscopy on Monday. But, you know, it's all fairly, and it's nothing particularly worrying at all. But the whole process is, it was very quick. I mean, it's been within a week. I'm very impressed with that compared to the old days when that would have, because the old days of doctor surgeries, it would have all been triaged when you go in. So mm-hmm. you've just got a day's worth of appointments. Mm-hmm. And you've no knowledge of what you're treating, just you've got a day's worth of appointments.
Yeah.
Now, when you've got a set online system where people have got to log their symptoms, log what it is, a couple of people can spend an hour going through them and going, right, those people aren't dying. We can talk to them in a month's time. Those people are dying. I need to talk to them today. Those are the people we need to concentrate on. These are the other ones. Yeah. And then bits and pieces in between. And that's a lot more efficient.
You got a 3-month waiting period to get the initial appointments, where they then set up the appointments that they actually need.
Mm.
That was the old model.
That was the old model, yeah. Yeah. The NHS is slow but free.
Mm. Yeah, can't be.
No, I think that one of the few advantages of the pandemic has allowed a sort of fast-track the evolution of using certain technologies and certain changes and processes that have been in place since, you know, well before cars were invented.
Oh, yeah. You think of the doctor's appointment system. That completely is it, isn't it? Exactly. That was you ring up, can I come and see the doctor? Yes, of course, sir. Or you send it out, I'd like to come and see the doctor on Thursday. And, you know, and you'd get your appointment back from the post and that would it. My grandparents did the same way until now.
Yeah, it's... I heard that somewhere on some podcast, someone said all the technology changes, we've in a lot of areas, we sped up things that would have happened in 5 years time happened last year, and none of that is going to go away.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, we might like here and there, maybe slide back a little bit, but none of it is going away. Like once it's in, like once the e-prescriptions are in and all the, like, the booking systems for like food ordering, like here before the pandemic, there were, I mean, a decent number of restaurants where you could order online, but it was like a small percentage. Now it's everywhere. And that's not going away. I mean, that isn't like here and there, a restaurant might maybe decide that it's not for them, but for the most part, that is here to stay.
Oh yeah.
Well, now completely. Given them a different revenue stream, and the fact that now they know that in the event of this happening, they have this revenue stream that they can potentially hold on for.
Exactly.
I think we'll probably see a decent percentage of the public too, will, especially people that are socially anxious and people that have a problem with crowds and things like that. Mm-hmm. They are now given the opportunity to live a life that will be more comfortable for them because society is now caught up to the ability to provide them the things that they need to survive without having them go out and put themselves through discomfort and stress to deal with it.
Yeah.
But the problem is that this fast evolution that we've now pushed through, again, it goes back to the problem of how we legislate things versus how we do them. We've now gone through a thing that's bumped technology forward 5 years in advance, you know, all in within a year, but have put none of the checks and balances in place.
True. Yeah.
Now even more of our information is being shared. Even more of our stuff is done electronically. Even more of our stuff is being handled by companies that there is very little oversight or very little in the way of checks and balances to manage how they deal with that information. And yet we're still sort of sitting there waiting for, you know, and again, all of these systems and all of these checks and balances are being managed by people that don't understand the difference between Facebook and Twitter.
Mm. This is true. And then, I mean, here in the UK at the moment, there's been some stuff to do with, and this is quite interesting in terms about that kind of data. Although I was talking about just now about the doctor's surgeries and giving and but all the patient information I gave, that's held at my doctor's surgery, at my practice. There's no other record of that anywhere else.
Yeah, that's the other problem.
Except, and there's currently moves to move that to centralized NHS database. There's been a lot of talk about it in the news in the last few weeks. And the GPs are very much against it.
Of course they are. Because because one, they have to invest in new software because the old software from the 90s that they've been using probably doesn't do it. And the vendor is sometimes not even around to add it. And the other thing is they just lose control. It's a control. Oh, yeah. They control the data. It's their data. It's not your data. It's their data.
Yeah. And I've noticed another thing. And I mean, I was talking to my doctor, this is years ago. This must be 10 years ago. I was talking to my doctor about something. I said, well, don't you guys have a shared database? So if I go to your other practice that's down the street in the other part of town, they don't have my records there. Oh, no. They don't have their records there. But why? And he was saying, oh, but that's confidentiality and everything else. And really? Why? Because surely one of you have done the other practice, you need to still have my records. I think that's changed now. When you and it's within a practice group like in mine. I'm sure if I went to any of the practices, it would be easy enough to type Ian Grant in and be able to get my medical history, whichever one of the practices I was in. That's taken a while for it to happen here. Yeah. I can tell you now. And so, moving to a shared database.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, here, when I moved from Ontario to Nova Scotia, I went to my doctor and I said, I want my entire medical history. And I made her give me a copy of it. She didn't want to give me the original. I said, then you have to give me a copy of everything. And she said, well, we don't do that. I go, well, then are you prepared to be responsible that I go see a doctor two provinces away and they treat me improperly because they don't have my medical history and something happens to me? Are you willing to, I'll have a lawyer draft something up right now that says you won't give me my medical history, but you'll be responsible for that. And she had my medical history to me the next day by courier.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's some countries have figured it out.
It's your information. It can't be more private. It can't be more personal than the things that are going on with your own body and your own health.
Yeah. Mm. I don't have current numbers, but about, what was it? I think 2015, the estimate for the US was that about, it was an estimate, they didn't know exactly, but about 250,000 people died a year because of missing information, missing or wrong information.
Really?
Yeah. Whoa. That's a lot of people.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, some countries have figured it out. Like France, for example, they have a central patient register. You can only access it when you have authorization from the patient and you have also your token as a doctor.
Oh, wow.
But you can't do that. Same here in Austria. Like, they're still, like, because it's a German-speaking country, they're very slow with adapting it. But it is coming along. Like, there is a central place where they can put like lab results and your medication and whatever. It's happening. It's, as I said, it's one of the biggest technology issues in health IT right now.
Mm.
Yeah. So all of that being exposed
is
a problem. Definitely is a problem.
Oh yeah.
I think I was just called Father Time in the chat.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, Bob Peach also says, wouldn't surprise me, the US healthcare system is terrible. That's the thing. It is good in some aspects, and it is horrible in basically everything else. And I can say that with like some experience. So.
Yeah.
Who has the next story? Rich. Fast Finger Rich, E3 recap.
It was E3.
Yay!
I mentioned it last week, but it was E3. And it was sort of awesome. I don't know. I just get overexcited. It's always awesome. And then everything is in my head. It's one of those things. It's going to be amazing. And then it never is quite what I expect it to be. It's like a week long of Apple events. But it happened. It's kind of technically still going on, but it's just the boring stuff at the end no one really cares about. And I sort of wanted to draw attention to this website, which is, I've put a link in the chat, but it's 2021.e3recap.com, which is a list of all the games that were announced at this year's E3 conference. There's 8 pages of games and so many fun, interesting, exciting, and some disappointing and what the hell is that kind of things came out. You know, it's we got a look at a new Metroid game, and God, I'm just pulling things out of my ass here now. There's so many things.
That's a worms, you know, there.
There's worms. There's all, God, I'm just looking at 8 pages of titles here, and I don't know if they necessarily mean anything on their own. I'm just getting overexcited looking at all the games.
Rich has so food.
Yeah, I encourage anybody to check this out and go back. And also, you can watch all of the conferences and see all the games that were going off. Oh, here we go. Oh, they're doing a re-release of Plumbers Don't Wear Ties. That's why would you? But okay, someone I'll probably buy that.
Didn't Sony also announce that the PS5 would be available in Sony stores?
They keep saying that thing will be available. Who knows? People say a lot of things, don't they?
Okay.
People say lots of things. You'll be able to buy a PS5. You'll be able to buy a graphics card. You'll be able to buy a CPU. All of these things, people just say them, but you know, what do they actually mean? Sony, notably not at E3. They've now made the jump where they prefer to do their own thing and disappoint us separately from everybody else. Gosh, I sound harsh on them, don't I? But Microsoft were there with all their cool stuff. They showed off lots of exciting things. Age of Empires 4, which I'm probably going to lose another 200 hours of my life to. Jeez. And lots of other things like that. There's basically a heck of a lot to be looking forward to in the world of gaming. I'm just gushing now. I'll stop.
I'm very excited about Age of Empires. I mean, I haven't played that in 10 years. Like, I stopped after 2, so...
It's one of those games, I think, in terms of real-time strategy, has anything ever been better than Age of Empires 2? Those games are to strategy games what Shakespeare is to playwriting. Mm-hmm. It's like, that. You know, you can do all other stuff late, but it all comes back down to, oh, but Age of Empires 2, though. Mm-hmm. So that's a classic. Microsoft showed off 30 games, 27 of them are coming to Game Pass on day one. Wow. So that makes that thing an even better value proposition. All the Yakuza games are on there now. They've said Yakuza 7 is going to be there. Gosh, even the new Rocksmith was shown off a tiny bit.
How long was that event? Like 27 games, like.
Oh, the Microsoft one. And the thing that's happening now is the extended version of that event.
Wow.
And it was about an hour and a half long.
The extended version is 3 days?
Yeah, something like that. It's like watching a game of cricket happen. but still more interesting.
Good thing Ewan isn't here.
Oh, God. Every time, like, you look at cricket and it's just lots of people just milling around the field going, should you go and do it? And then one of them will throw it and they'll hit it and they're like, all right, we've done that. And then they just stand there for a bit. And then there's people fielding on a phone going, yeah, I think they're going to do the thing in a bit. And cricket's good when it's your go. Like golf. Sorry, I'm not a sports person. I will upset sports people. I am sorry.
Cricket is like baseball. It's good when you're there with friends and you're drinking and you don't pay attention to the game at all.
Yeah. You're basically just hanging out with friends getting pissed. That's really what we're all endorsing, I think.
I always remembered about George Carlin's line about golf. It says, watching golf is about as exciting as watching flies have sex.
Yes.
It's really...
Depends on the flies?
Depends on what the fly is working with, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that went bad very quickly.
Yeah, quick, someone talk about Windows 11.
Yeah, Atlee, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Can't say that after we talk about flies. Anyways, so apparently Microsoft told us about 10 years ago that Windows 10 was the last version of Windows. Mm-hmm. And then they lied to us. Changed their mind again. The next version of Windows will be Windows 11. And they're changed the UI a fair bit. They did, what they did is they're the Windows 10X. So it was supposed to be sort of like a lightened down version of Windows. It was supposed to compete with Google Chrome or Chrome OS rather, Google's Chrome OS. And it was supposed to be a very, very lightweight version of Windows. And for some reason, they don't seem to have Chrome or the 10X ready to go. And so they've decided to apply most of the UI changes in there, or a lot of the UI changes in there, to the next version that's coming out of Windows, and change a bunch of things under the covers. There's supposed to be a lot of fundamental changes being made to Windows to try and evolve it up to where they want Windows to be. I have mixed feelings about it because Microsoft has historically not done very, very well with applying new UIs to Windows. So I'm wondering how much of Windows will now be a mix of Windows 3.1, Windows 95.
Yeah, how many layers of Windows UI?
There's going to be so much of it in there.
Seven, Windows Vista, Windows 8, Windows 10. I think if we add all those numbers up, what do we end up with? Like Windows 45, 43, something like that?
Yeah.
I'm wondering about that because, I mean, if you go through the UI currently in Windows 10, and this is Windows 10 after 10 years, you can find elements that came from Windows 3.1 that have not changed.
Yeah,
it's kind of notepad.exe.
It's kind of like one of those Russian dolls. Like you have one UI and you open it up, and then there's another one, and you open up, and there's another one.
I love the fact that they tried to claim a long time ago that Windows is no longer built on DOS, but I'm pretty sure it's deep enough. DOS is coring down there somewhere. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious to see what they do with it. I mean, the reason that I'm not super optimistic or excited about this is because they've been talking about Fluent Design now for 4.5 years, and it's still nowhere near a pervasive part of Windows. They backtracked basically on their store object model, where they tried to do everything to make every app sort of fit in with the UI. And they've gone back to, you know, promoting Windows Win32 based applications. So, mm-hmm. So very, very old applications that your grandfather would have used. Mm-hmm. And that design is just as valid now as the Metro style or the, you know, the UWP style of application. They seem to be trying too hard to make everybody happy, and in mm-hmm. what they end up doing is making really nobody that happy, because there's shortcomings. I really wish that Microsoft had had someone with the over testosterone levels that Jobs had that was willing to say, no, you guys are stupid. This is what you need, and this is what I'm going to give you. And if you don't like it, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because
either you do it or you don't. Like, there is no middle ground where we do a little bit.
I know this dribbling changes out is excruciating to watch. And I'm really hoping, I'm kind of disappointed that they did what they did with Windows 10X. Because I was thinking there finally is an actual new version of Windows.
They're driven by business though, aren't they? It's in the end, the corporate market's where all the money is for the subscriptions for Windows. That's where the money is. And businesses are loath to change. I mean, that we all whine and gripe about sort of every time they update Windows 10 and we've got to then roll out a new set of things, and no one's got time for that. And it just becomes this behemoth of things where this company's still running bloody Windows 7.
Exactly. And so then what you need to do is you need to fork it.
Mm.
Everybody. Like you need to fork it and say, here's the Windows business. Windows business can move at the snail's pace that business wants to move. And
well, they've tried that. They've got the different channels, haven't they?
Well, and so the problem is they, instead of forking off and allowing Windows Personal to be an actual evolved system that did things and protected the average general user. And then having the Windows business have its own channel that, you know, that a corporation that's, you know, still using this, you know, 15-year-old technology is got people are hiring people in place to keep that safe and keep that managed. And Windows does, you know, Windows, Microsoft could then focus on making sure that they maintain the security in that as much as they could and evolve it slowly and effectively over time to keep the businesses happy. Well, they could have made the version of an operating system you could give to your parents to use for the general stuff that they're doing, Word, Excel, and web browsing and Facebook, and still know that they're safe and they're not sitting there with all the holes and garbage in place that's had to migrate up because corporations can't get off their butt and evolve things because it's not effective, cost effective for them. I get why the corporations don't want to. What I don't understand is why Microsoft did not fork it off into a personal and a business side, because that would have made more sense. It would have been more cost effective for Microsoft's development cycles. It would have been a way to keep people probably more interested in computing because it could have evolved with the technology and the devices and changed along with things and moved with people's needs. You could have a business version that had the old gray battleship, because nobody decorates their home like they decorate their office at the corporation.
No.
So why is your computing done?
I'm not so sure that would have worked, because I think ultimately they would have diverged so much that software would have been a problem. Maintaining it.
What would happen? I mean, just speculating. If they did get sort of a Steve Jobs-esque character over at Microsoft who just said, right, sod the lot of you, Windows 12, we're starting with a blank page entirely. We don't care about backwards compatibility. We're just going to make the best OS we can make from nothing. And if you've got a problem because your Windows 7 app doesn't run on it, that's a you problem, not an us problem. We're done carrying you. And
it's not like
what are they going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You're not going to buy something else, because if you did, you could just buy new Windows. The point is you don't want to buy anything.
Exactly.
So, Sadia, Microsoft are losing nothing. And if companies want to have someone come in and maintain this 10-year-old operating system for them, that Microsoft aren't getting any money from those people anyway.
No, yeah. Microsoft is more than happy to take the money of those people for like a maintenance contract. And simply we're going to pay X amount every year and we're going to maintain Windows 7 for you.
Yeah, I mean, some places have paid that. Over here in the UK, I think there's definitely heard of some places are saying,
some places are still paying for Windows XP.
And when you were saying you didn't know whether the divergence would cause it so that the software, listen, it would be no different than them supporting Office on Mac OS and Windows OS.
Yeah.
If the Windows consumer was a completely different code base and a completely different thing, it wouldn't be any different than supporting it on Mac OS or on Linux, which they're bringing Office to Linux.
So on Microsoft, probably not, but the third-party software market might be a different game. Like, I mean, the big companies can probably do it, but the smaller indie guys, they're going to decide like one way or another and say, okay, it's either available for consumers or it's available for companies.
Are they getting much corporate business though anyway?
There's nobody that's making corporate software and personal software. Nobody is. The only person that is Microsoft. Tell me something that you have to have on your business computer that you also have to have on your home computer.
Well, something like Photoshop, for example. Like I wouldn't say home user, but like professional user that wants the more advanced version.
Exactly. And so that person would have a business level computer, because that person's not buying a tablet down at Best Buy. That person is not buying a $300 or $500 laptop, which is the market that the consumer Windows would be chasing. That person would be going and buying a professional class device and running a professional class operating system on.
But as I said, if the consumer side advances like further, like the UI changes, the underlying system changes, I'm not so sure, as I said, I'm not so sure that would work.
Well, I can tell you that it would work. Do you know why? Because Apple proved it did work.
Well, but Apple only has one system.
Exactly.
Apple even brought their mobile systems closer together again.
No, Apple has two systems, and if you think that the core elements of iOS and macOS are the same, you're wrong. They run on a layer that allows the iOS apps to run on macOS, because Mac is basically emulating an iPad for you for a lot of intents and purposes.
That's actually something Apple has been doing. We're not going to talk Apple, but that's something Apple has been doing the last couple of years, bringing the underlying frameworks back together. They diverged, and they're bringing them back. Like the core frameworks behind the scenes are, a lot of them are the same. The kernel is more or less the same.
The kernels are completely different, though.
No, it's still
what you're playing. What was that?
It's still a Mac kernel.
But they're not developed.
They're different configurations, but it's the same kernel.
Different teams.
Yeah.
There are two different kernels. There are two different kernels. Then you have the abstraction layer, which they are bringing. They're doing basically what Windows has been trying to do, right? Mm-hmm. But they proved that there could be a consumer-only operating system that would not only be popular, it's more popular than their business operating system ever was.
Yeah.
Right?
Mac OS
holds less than 11% of 10% of the PC market.
Yeah. And that market is way smaller than the smartphone or mobile market is. Like, even if you add Windows and everything together, the smartphone market is way bigger than that at this point.
I get that, but what I'm saying is Apple proved that could work.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Because there would have been no reason that if Microsoft had diverged at that point, that they couldn't have been building tablets that were consumer-based. They could have eventually built a phone and had an ecosystem, and they could have actually competed at some level.
Mm.
But they could have done an awful lot more for consumer computing than they're able to do now, because they're being weighed down by 25 years of...
Yep. No, I definitely agree with that. Like Microsoft has a big problem that they're not willing to cut off. Like, or it takes them 25 years to cut off something. Mm-hmm. Like, when did they cut off Win16? That was not too.
That wasn't that. That was 3 or 4 years ago. That wasn't long ago. It's frankly ridiculous. A lot of the legacy stuff that stays in Windows. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's things. I mean, the best example is look at Control Panel.
Oh, I was just going to say that.
Look at Control Panel. Half of it's there, and then you've still got to go and delve around and find the old bits to get the bits you need.
I heard someone say
settings thing in Control Panel.
The phrase, some people still like to use Control Panel. It's like, no, I don't care. It's just that's where the buttons are. You haven't put the settings in the settings app. So
you put it in stuff to go there. Control panel.
Why in the world are there three ways to uninstall applications, and why are all of them look and act differently and have different access to applications? That's a problem.
Oh, yes, of course, you can remove it from the...
You get one thing. If you go to the store, you get another thing. If you go to the control panel and go applications and program or programs and features, you get a completely different thing.
Yeah, control panel is the only one that has all the apps to uninstall.
Exactly. Yes.
Microsoft, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's ridiculous. It truly is ridiculous.
I mean, I'm really happy that they finally figured out how to put some kerning on some of their edges. That'll be really nice, I guess. But, I mean, for me, I'm not... I'm always time getting excited about this, because it sounds like they're just going to slap another layer of lipstick on this pig.
I kind of agree with you. I think it is. It does seem to be exactly that. Because I mean, I'm looking at my desktop, my Win 10 desktop, and that's had the latest one go back on. And I've got some more crap on it I didn't need. There's now a little MSN doohickey thing that I can hover my mouse over. It tells me the weather and stuff. And where's that bloody come from? Why? And I don't want that.
Oh, I kind of like that.
I've had to sort that out now and get rid of all the Daily Mail and Mirror articles. Otherwise, I can feel my brain cells being slowly melted by celeb bullshit stories I do not need to see. Well, Pass of the Week. God, I
thought, you see, that's one of those features that I thought they've added this to Windows 10. There was talk of a new UI update for Windows 10 that apparently got pulled. And then I'm still shocked to suddenly see, well, here's Windows 11 then with all those things that we said was coming to Windows 10. I'm still in a little bit of a state of shock. Yeah. And they've moved the buttons to the middle. That's clever. I can't think where they got that from.
Oh, dear, dear, no, no. And you've been able to, there's been apps for years that'll do that for you if you want it.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember, like, Windows, was that Windows XP time? Where you could basically get a, like, install an app.
Window blinds.
And it looked
window
like
blinds. OS. Window blinds was the tool, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you could layer a whole thing over the top. I did all of that at the time. Right? It was fantastic.
Me too. I have a different story, and I had to pick from many. I actually wanted to talk about Windows 10 support ending in 2025. But since we talked so much about Windows, I thought, why not talk about bees? Yes, this is a tech story. You wouldn't think so. It's actually really clever. There are companies out there that are bees are kind of in danger in a lot of areas, like a lot of parasites and stuff. And I think global warming is not really helping either. There are companies now that are putting bees basically on like rooftops and just all over the place. And they had to figure out a clever solution how they could monitor that. And they're using technology. They're using sensors. They're using machine learning and cameras and that, like everything that you would like think someone would use for bad, they're using for a really good thing. So yeah, I thought this was a really nice story to round up the day.
That's cool. I like that.
A little bit of me was hoping they were trying to strap AirTags onto bees. No.
Yeah, but wait. Maybe if they're small enough. I mean, they have tracked bees, so it's not.
I mean, there's big money in bees, isn't there? Because I mean, you don't look at the price of Makuna honey or whichever the one is that's eye-wateringly expensive for a very small tub.
Mm-hmm.
You can see why. I mean, in the room I'm in now, up in that corner over there, there's a bee's nest up in the roof.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
I thought it was wasps at first, but it's not. Apparently, according to the, I called out a local pest control guy. I said, "Oh, it's bees. So they're going to do you no harm. They're not going to sting anybody. They're not interested in you. Leave them there. They'll be fine. They'll do their thing. They're going to make your garden look pretty and your flowers all grow. Just ignore them. Okay. So we have, and they've been fine. But when you go in, there's across here, there's a little workshop area I've got, and if you go in there and stand in the corner, you can hear a steady hum. It's very weird when you're in here at night and it's dark, and then you've got the kind of sound. It's very, very weird, but awesome. It's cool. It's fine. They're not doing anyone any harm, so I'm leaving them be.
The honey industry itself, globally, is worth about $9.2 billion or £6.5 billion.
That's crazy money.
That's a lot if you think about it.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
For such a simple commodity.
Yeah. It's
when you think about it, simple... unrefined sugar, a very simple commodity.
I wish there was as much of a market for the goo I produce.
Okay.
Ew.
Sorry.
I don't want to know what you're out there trying to rub your legs against. That's
sorry. Just... Yeah, no, I was wondering. I was wondering this as well.
Anything that will hold still long enough these days, you know.
Yeah. That's what happens, you get old in it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The product is called the Bee Home. It's like a solar powered kind of a bee home, like it says. And there's an app, and like I said, it's really interesting to do that for something that, like you would think, is completely low tech. Like who would have thought? So.
Their future tech projects include being tiny waggle dancing robots inside the hives to influence the bee behavior.
That's real Black Ops stuff there.
That is, isn't it?
Wow.
And then there'll be tiny soldiers next coming raiding, you know.
Yeah. Just imagining that from the bee's point of view. The humans are sending in like Terminators now. Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah, right. What's this? We're under attack.
I'll be back. Sorry, couldn't resist.
That was funny. This podcast and all the other podcasts on the network is supported by TSO Host, our friends that help us with like all the streaming and hosting needs that we have. We have two really nice, powerful servers that bring you the live stream. It's not their fault that it's not working right now. That's my fault. They also bring us like a really nice big server for our website where we can have all like the podcasts and the podcast episodes and the blog posts and just everything we do. And all they want for that is a little brand recognition. So yeah, even if you don't need anything, just head over to BritishTechNetwork.com. Sorry, head over to tsohost.co.uk. Wrong website, but I mean, you can also go to BritishTechNetwork.com. There's a link in footer. You just click on that. head over to tsohost. And yeah, head over to social media of your choice and just thank them for supporting British Tech Network. And the other really awesome company is iMend Max. I know that they do more than Macs, but Macs are Apple products are their main business. I think they fixed the occasional like Chromebook or like even Windows PC if you brought them in. But as I said, their main business is fixing anything Apple that does not have cloth on it. So no HomePods, sorry. Yeah. They're really awesome. Callum is usually on the show on Fridays on the Mac show. They do like, it's really crazy. They do like chip level repairs. They've had a couple of M1 Macs in.
And oh, really? Right.
Yeah, they've had a couple that had liquid damage or drop damage and they had to fix. And they had to fix that and they did. Mm. Like it's one of the few companies in the world that I know of that actually go in with like a microscope and like a little soldering iron and just fix everything. They also do offer refurbished Macs and refurbished iPhones and iPads. And I think if you need something new, they can also order that for you. And the really cool thing is if you mention BTN during checkout, they give you 5% off. So thank you so much to TSO Host and to iMend Max for supporting this show. Time for the cool thing. Start us off, Ian.
Okay, I have a mundane but useful thing. I've been redoing my desk and I've bought myself a monitor arm. Dirt cheap, really, really dirt cheap. It comes in at price of prime of about 20 pounds. And then there's normally a voucher on these ones and it drops it right down to like 15, even below that. And it's really great. I've got two monitors on here now that I'm on this desk. And I never bothered with them before. Dad was I'm stood on the desk. And so much desk space you get now, you get the monitors lifted up off the desk. It makes so much difference. I've got so much more room around here with where I'm working. It's brilliant. And for very little money, and it seems to work fine. I'm holding up a 27 on one side and a 24 on the other without too much problem at all. Highly recommended for very cheap.
Very nice.
Well, I might have to get one of those. They do look good.
I mean, it was next to nothing. It was really, there's always an offer on them. I mean, there, look, get £6, what is it currently at? Save £10, apply 10% voucher. There's normally an offer on those ones. So, yeah.
Very nice.
Just clap it to your desk.
Atlee, what's your cool thing?
I have recently, it's on its way. It hasn't gotten here yet, but I am getting a loop deck and I'm putting in a couple of links because for the average person or the average person that's doing work from home still, or that will periodically do different things, there are all sorts of different SDKs and different add-ins that you can get for Loop Deck to work with things that you will use for general things for working. So what I'm getting it for is because I'm going to be using the SDK to customize it as a button center for things that I do commonly on my computer. So if I want to be able to swap over to things, it gives me a quick way to do it without having to hunt out buttons or locations or where a window is or different things like that. And I'm also going to be getting into doing a little bit more with video and a few other things. So I'm really excited about the flexibility of it and the fact that I can actually go in and change what it does and make it work the way I need it to. Mm-hmm. So pretty
that
awesome.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. And it's nice to have it as a separate device that sort of sits aside from the computer, and you can always be sure that that button is going to be in that one spot that you need it. And it doesn't just have to be a button to start up an app. It could be something to mute your computer, or you can change which screen you're focused on, or you can, if you have several different webcams or cameras set up or microphones, you can swap them around. Like there's a lot of really great features for it.
I'm looking at these and wondering how I've existed so long without one.
I know, it's really awesome.
Yeah, I think I need, with the jog dial, I think I might need one of those.
Yeah,
god, you people cost me money.
That's a cool thing.
Very nice. Rich, that's a good one thing.
Very cool.
Well, then, okay, sticking with the putting things on your desk thing, I got an upgrade to this stand. I know Jeff talked about the blue one a couple of weeks ago. This is the Rode PSA-1, which is sort of 40, 50 quid cheaper and not quite as fancy. It's not blocked in, but it's still huge. And I'm amazed I can just move it and there's nothing to tighten on it. And it doesn't just slowly like droop down, so I get quieter throughout the episode like the old one did. So it's much improved for me. And I can recommend this thing.
It's awesome.
But it's just a mic stand. There's not much.
Gonna post a link for it?
Yeah, sorry, will do. Here we go. Yeah.
No, like it's definitely a worthwhile investment to have a good, really good microphone arm.
Yeah,
it just makes everything so much easier. Like you can move the microphone out of the way when you don't need it. And
exactly. I mean, I know technically that 20 quid mic stand was sort of holding it up, but no, this is just so much easier and better. And I recommend splashing out a little bit on a mic stand. Yeah. Now, get something bigger if you can, though, I suppose.
I was looking at the wire configuration that you have, because it looks like you have the small wire that goes from the microphone to another clip. And then an extension wire? Is that what that red wire?
Well, yeah, because that's part of the microphone.
Yeah,
Yeah, so that goes up to there. Then that's going to a
regular XLR. Oh, so the microphone stand that you have is the original one that came with the microphone, and then this just clips into it.
No. Let's see. Oh. So everything here down, that's microphone from here down. And the red cable, that's just a regular XLR cable.
Nice.
And then into a preamp. And into a mixer. Which is why I could do with getting my monitors off my desk, because there's lots of wires and other things there jammed in between them.
Yeah.
Definitely. My cool thing, I just have to hunt down the link. I'm just checking whether it's available in the UK as well. My cool thing is a Gordon Ramsay show called Gordon Ramsay Uncharted. And It's really, really interesting. I mean, I like cooking. I'm a big fan of a lot of cooking shows, and a lot of the shows Gordon Ramsay is on. Some of them are more interesting than others, to be honest. But this one is really, really cool because it's not like the usual cooking competition or reality TV show or stuff he does. He actually travels the world and he really, really tries to connect with the, whatever the like the regional local cuisine is. So he doesn't go to quote unquote Spain or the US and then like look at one thing. Like he will go to like a region and just like whatever is local there. And like he will hunt, he will like, what did he do? He went fishing, I think, which didn't go too well. he was in, where was he? Somewhere in, I want to say, in Texas, I think. And he hunted, hunted for a rattlesnake with a guy that was half blind. And his dog. So the guy didn't do much. He just gave him directions, and Gordon Ramsay actually caught and then prepared a rattlesnake. So that's the level of commitment. And like the premise of the show is like he will meet up with someone there, like a friend or like someone he knows. Then they will give him some pointers, and then he will just travel and visit people and get to know the people in the land. And then at the end, they do like a little kind of a cooking competition where Gordon Ramsay and whoever is local there will kind of cook, and they will invite the people from the village over or like from the city and cook for them. And then, yeah, it's just fun. Like, and it's a really, really, really good show. I really enjoyed it.
Ramsay's, I like, he can be obnoxious to a point, but I do like him at times.
Yeah, I have the feeling that this obnoxious part is a bit of a persona, a bit of a public persona. Yes. I mean, I'm pretty sure he can be if he wants to be. Like, it didn't come from anywhere. Like, nowhere.
It's from Ouija land. It's from Ouija land. What do you expect? I mean, he's going to be slightly angry. Yeah. He's a Scotsman. But the one thing with him that some stuff impresses me. He runs a marathon in about 3 hours or something. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous.
Yep.
He's super fit.
He is amazing. Like, I mean, I don't know where he finds the time for it. I mean, he has also a family and a kid.
Yeah.
Like if you follow him on Instagram, it's really cute when he goes like on a bike ride with his daughter and stuff. Yeah. So.
Two old shows to look out for. Look for the F word.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one he did a How to Cook series. And that was a long time ago. Yeah. I learned so much from that.
Yeah. I think, didn't he also do the best restaurant in the UK at some point?
He did that terrible thing where it became basically the same show every week. And I think the Americans lapped it up. The Kitchen Nightmares thing.
Oh, yeah. That is...
That's trash. Like, that's trash.
Like Hell's Kitchen and so on. Like, the reality TV show. They're interesting to watch, like, on the side. Like it's not the best show, but it's like entertainment. Like you can have fun with it. Don't take it too seriously. It's like, yeah. But I said, like this is one of the shows. Like I originally discovered it on YouTube because he also posts like some of the videos, or like he does videos while he's on location shooting. He'll do like a quick whatever. He did fried rice or something while he was in Thailand or something. I have a feeling this is the closest to the real person. It's hard to tell, like knowing him and without like, but I just get the feeling like you can see the passion and the interest that he's really interested in getting to know the people, getting to know the culture, and doing like not coming in as like a Brit or half American, I would almost say.
Yeah.
And then like doing his thing. So he'll bring in his experience.
Yeah,
but he still shows great respect for the local culture and for the traditions.
That's just cool.
And he will try to not F it up.
Well, I think over the last few years, though, he seems to have mellowed out an awful lot. He was a little more. I think he leaned a little too hard on that whole abrasive brand. And now that he's got some of the cachet and he's got the following, he's pulling back from that.
Yeah. It was how he made money. That's what he was known for, and that's what people wanted to see. And
then they wanted the angry sweary chef, and so they got that. Is it, as I say, an interesting character. He was almost a footballer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then he got injured.
Yeah, he talks
soccer about for
yeah, he talks about that quite a bit. So, Yeah, as I said, it's a really good show, and there are bits and pieces on YouTube. So if you can't see it, I checked in the UK, and it seems to be on Disney Plus worldwide. So that's a good place to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is the third richest celebrity chef in the world, Gordon Ramsay?
Okay. That doesn't surprise me. Like, I mean, he has so many restaurants in so many places.
Is Oliver more money,
number two.
Is he? Oh, right. That surprises me.
Net worth 400 million.
Yeah.
Number one is Alan Wong, who I've never heard of, but he's worth $1.1 billion.
Probably super popular in Asia. Alan Wong.
Yeah. I don't know. No, I don't recognize the name. I know quite a bit of telly chefs. I do like a bit of cooking TV. And Patrice, we must at some point talk about food.
Mm-hmm. We do.
I do a thing with it because it would be enough, okay. I'm sure.
Good. I think it's time to end the show. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. Also, thanks, chatroom, despite all the stream issues. Ian, tell people where they can find you.
You can find me occasionally in the Slack room. I'm on LinkedIn, Ian Grant. If you need Commvault fixing, I'm your man. That's what I do.
Good to know. And Atle, thanks for being here. Like, always welcome.
Sorry, I haven't been here in so long. You can find me on the socials at Atle Hunter. And you can find me here, hopefully a lot more often over the next little while. And good. You can find me at atlehunter.com.
Always welcome. I'm pretty sure Ewan will be back at some point. But and Rich?
You can find me on the YouTube channel Early Morning Barking or on earlymorningbarking.com, which has all the stuff from the YouTube channel. Yeah.
And you're going to start working on an awesome t-shirt museum?
I think that's my next my next move.
Should be it. Okay, you can find me on everything I do on thepatrice.com. I'm here every week on the Big Show every Thursday and on the Mac Show every Friday, so also tomorrow. I think tomorrow's show should be with Ewan. At least he said he would be there. If not, it's just me. And yeah, I have a food, as you can guess, I have a food podcast called Foodie Flashback, where I talk to interesting people like, well, hopefully soon, Ian and maybe Atlee, about food and food-related memories, and Rich as well. Like, I have to get all of them. I want everybody. Like, if I can interview everybody in the world, I will do it. Like, there will be a 7 billion episode podcast and it will be mine. So I want everybody's story. Don't think I will ever do that. I think there are too many people born every day for that to work. But anyway, foodieflashback.com, that's my podcast. And yeah, you can find this very podcast and everything we do on BritishTechNetwork.com. And please make sure to support us. There's a really nice PayPal button there, because we have Kyle doing the news show five days a week, every morning, and it's really awesome. It's a couple of minutes with the best, biggest tech news we need, and we pay him for that because it is a lot of work. And yeah, for that we need your support, because we're clearly not making any money with this. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.